97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard live here at Tim Daly Nissan in Murray, 4500 South State Street. Got a bunch of Jazz gear available for you right now, so come by and let's get you squared away and get you taken care of. Let's go. Joining us now, David Locke, play-by-play voice of the Utah Jazz, joining us. David, how are you?
Hey, David.
I like Jazz gear. What can I have?
Whatever you would like, David.
Really?
We got a bunch of these shirts from the playoff run, so you can go with a black Take Note, or there's an orange.
Oh, I have the black. I was wearing the black Take Note with the yellow writing yesterday.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. We've got some of those. Do you have the orange ones?
I do not.
A little bit of a smaller Take Note on that one, but that's available for you.
We just ran out of the Dante Exum bobbleheads. We had some of those.
Those are Rodney Hoods.
Oh, were they Rodney,
Rodney Hoods? Yeah,
they were Rodney Hood. Those were good.
It wasn't a Trey Burke.
No, we did not have any of the Trey Burks.
Okay.
And we got some hats, too. So I don't know what your hat total is looking like, but we can get that squared away for you as well.
I'm wearing a Jazz visor as we speak.
Hey, I'm getting to a certain age where, like, I got LASIK about 10 years ago, and they told me, like, hey, this is going to be a great opportunity, but you might need reading glasses, you know, coming up here in a bit. And I saw you rocking the spectacles the other day. Are you?
It's over.
Yeah.
It's over. Once you know, it's brutal because once you head down that line to start using them, then, like, now I can't do anything without them. But when I was fighting it, I was like, what am I fighting? Like, I'm not going to make it to, like, 60 without using these things. Like, but once you start using them, your eyes just fall apart. Like, it's brutal.
Are you, have you had to increase the font on your cell phone yet?
I accidentally did it the other day on my texts. I don't know how I did it. I think it's wonderful.
Are you not?
I haven't. Let's just say this. I have no idea how I did it. I have not searched to see how they fix it.
Are you not a LASIK candidate?
I have 2015 long vision.
Yeah, LASIK.
Oh,
yeah.
It's only for long.
Yeah. That's
right. Like, I've always had just amazing, like, long vision. I just, like, and every now and then I happen, like, during play-by-play, every now and then I'll see something and Ron will look at me like, how do you see that? But the short, you know, the one that's hard now is play-by-play is going from the computer screen to the floor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
I could see that.
Like, I had my glasses pretty much on my hooked them, you know, like a really snazzy look, hooked on my shirt all year long. I have not gone to the thing around your neck where your glasses hang yet, and not ready for that. Somehow, to me, that adds 10 years to your age.
Yeah, that's not a good look. You probably want to avoid that. I was doing a little woodworking on the lathe the other day, and I was trying to sand off this little spot, and I couldn't see it. I'm like, what is going on? And then finally pulled back a little bit, and I'm like, oh, there it is.
How old are you?
44.
Yeah, it shouldn't happen yet. You need two more years till it happens. That's like, okay. They literally say, like, it's going to happen at 47. Mine happened 46, 47. Mine happened badly this year. 50 was kind of the breakthrough where I quit. Like, I stopped fighting it. Like, it's now a problem if I go to dinner without my reading glasses and get the bill.
Oof.
I know there like are
the
a
other,
lot of...
The other night I thought the waitress, we went out for dinner, the bill should have been like $73. I thought the dollar sign was a two. I thought she had charged us $273 and was like, there's a mistake here. It's like, why?
All right. Let's talk. Where's your concern level for Team USA, and is it something that's even a storyline for you?
You know, my real concern level, and maybe this is totally unfair, my concern level is Pop.
We brought that up earlier in the week. I'm glad you're going there.
That's my concern level. Is I didn't think he was very good in the regular season this year in the NBA. Like, we're just being totally honest, and maybe his team's not very good. We'll see over time. But like when we played him, like. It was like, whoa, what's going on? Like, and then if I remember correctly, he coached a team recently in international play that looked questionably motivated. And then I didn't love his answer yesterday about like, well, Jerry Sloan ran the same play for 20 straight years every single time down, and that's what we're going to do. We're just going to be very simple on offense and very simple on defense. It's like, I mean, I get it. You don't have a lot of prep time, and so you can't be too complicated, but you got the best players in the world, so you can be a little complicated. So I'm a little concerned on just that the world's caught up to our structure, and, you know, maybe that's unfair on Pop, like, but I do think the international game's different, and I know he's immersed himself and spent a lot of time in it, but it's like it's an entire NBA, like, I almost feel like they need to have an international coaching staff whose job is for the year to coach that team, and then the head, and they report to the head coach. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, like, Pop could be the head coach, but there's three coaches in the league, three coaches who are following and scouting and preparing international game plans that are different than NBA game plans.
Well, so, you know, David, I was thinking about this.
It's kind of ridiculous. It's kind of ridiculous to talk about Pop, right? He's going to the Hall of Fame, but, I mean, we've also seen the greatest coaches in every single sport. At some point in time, the game does slide by them a little bit. And so I don't know if that's happening to Pop or not, but there definitely was that murmur throughout the NBA season this year.
Well, I don't know if the guys are dismissing what he's saying, but there's just a lot of hero ball, and it feels like the international game and the way they officiate the international game goes directly against your ability to run hero ball, just with your ability to defend so aggressively.
If you're not running, if you're doing what he said, which is you're not running a lot of plays, and you're just being very simple and running the same thing over and over again, I think you're more likely to fall into hero ball.
Yeah.
Now, on the other end, maybe the heroes don't have a lot of interest in learning a really intricate offense in 10 days. But these guys are basketball geniuses, so they can do it if you can get them to do it. Right? Like Kevin Durant and Dame Lillard are not going to have a hard time picking up new actions, new angles, new stuff in a 10-day period of time. They're the greatest in the world.
Right.
And then the other...
So I'm concerned. I think the second game against Australia is telling. Though, frankly, if I was Australia, I wouldn't play my guys, because I have the psychological edge now, and I wouldn't play Patty Mills and Joe Ingles and any of those guys in this next exhibition game. I just totally sit them all. Because the worst thing that could happen to you, sorry, my apologies, the worst thing that could happen is that you play your guys, USA comes out and blasts them by 30 and completely negates their win.
That's pretty funny. That's actually, yeah, I see what you're thinking. Yeah.
We're going to rest, guys against Team USA.
Right. If I was Australia, I'm playing Dante 35 minutes to see what he can do, and I'm finding out some of my young guys while Ingles, Dellavedova, and all my other guys are just sitting. Patty Mills.
I had no idea Matisse Thybulle was on that team until I saw him suit up for the Boomers, too. That's a guy that can cause a lot of problems on the perimeter as well. From
how did he get
standpoint.
On that team?
I have no idea, but some kind of lineage there somewhere, apparently.
Right.
What's
the rule?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure.
I know my son cannot ski for Japan.
He cannot?
Because his grandparents were born in the U.S.
Oh, okay.
Well, I was trying to think, like, Mike Brown was the head coach in Nigeria, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no rules on coaching.
Okay.
But athlete participation... I think you have to have had your grandparents born, at least have your grandparents born in the country. Maybe every country is different, though. Like, I don't. And Olympics are different than World Championships.
I wonder what the rule is on that.
Yeah.
But some psycho dad has researched this about skiing.
Well, and there's a lot of guys, like, I think Travis Hansen.
That was supposed to be funny, by the way.
I know, that was funny. Travis Hansen at BYU and then Spencer Nilsson, they got the golden ticket where they got some level of residency.
Dual citizenship.
Dual citizenship, yeah. And I don't know if that would count towards.
Did they play Olympic? I don't know that.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know if that transfers to an Olympics. I know that allows you to play overseas.
Right. Because the overseas, the rules are there's only so many players on every roster that can be foreign. And so if you can be if you get citizenship in a European country, then you don't classify as a foreigner.
And you make lots of money.
It's good. Yeah,
so,
smart.
So David, let me get this straight. So you're
Travis Hansen's a Russian, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Spencer Nilsson is some weird, bizarre, like Azerbaijan or some funky country.
Good for him. Hope he flies the flag.
So you're saying that
sure
your son could participate for Japan
really
if his grandpa – if if your wife's parents were born in Japan, but they were born in America, but if they were born in Japan, he could participate or compete for Japan. Is that what you're saying?
I believe so. Yes. Huh. Actually, most of his great grandparents were born in the U.S. too, which is like, there's a very funny moment in our family. We were in Japan. We were watching the Olympics that were in China. Because we were in Japan, we got ping pong. And it was a German versus a Japanese in a ping pong game. We had the whole family together, and everybody was rooting for the Japanese guy, except for me, who was supposed to be rooting for the German, and because that's where my family's from. But then all of a sudden, in the back, like myself and my wife's brother got together, and we started to try to figure out the lineage of our families, and we found out that like my family actually came to the U.S. like 10 years before theirs. But the stereotypes, probably racist, but the stereotype is that the white guy's been here a lot longer than the Japanese guy, right? Like that's, but that in this case is like almost not true at all. And so the joke was going to be that my kids had to switch and join me on the German side because they had ancestors that were more recently in Germany than in Japan. But it turned out to not be true. The crazy one is like, just on, since it's, you know, July, we'll talk about this. My wife's great-grandparents went back and forth between the U.S., they were born in Seattle, went to Japan, and came back on boats.
Wow. That took a little while.
In, like, 1900s, like early 1910, like one of them went back for an arranged marriage. So, talk, you know, so it's like different generations. So her grandmother went back, was the ultimate catch, right, because it was an American citizen. And so went back for an arranged marriage and then got back on the boat with her new husband and came back. Different world.
Different world. Huh? Yeah, no doubt.
Pretty incredible. I love ancestry. Love stuff like that.
And I think it's interesting, like, just like shifting your mindset, right? Like on that whole concept that I talked about, like, you know, my wife gets asked all the time, like, where are you from? And her answer is Los Angeles. And so, no, where are you from? I'm from Los Angeles. Like, yeah, like, are you asking my ancestry? In. That's a different question.
Jeez. Uh-huh. All right. So the Jazz front office, obviously getting ready for the NBA draft. Is there, I mean, everybody talks about Jimmy Butler, but there's really, and I don't know how much time you spent with the draft, if this is a better draft than usual or what the tiers are looking like this year. But there's some people that I ran into that talked about, well, what can you get at 30? And my answer is not much, because if he's at 30, there's a reason he's at 30. What can the Jazz possibly do, if anything, to help bolster this team throughout the with the draft?
So we do an ultimate mock draft on the Locked On Podcast Network.
Yeah.
That will air starting Monday, and people are welcome to listen to it. And I had the 30th pick. And I was offered the 45th and 46th, I think, from Toronto. And I was offered the 44th, 47th, and 58th from Brooklyn.
Wow, take it.
Would you make either of those deals?
I'd take the Brooklyn one for sure.
So I took the Brooklyn one. Yep. So I traded the 30th pick for 3 second-rounders. And my thought was, if I was really the GM, I would probably select one, maybe two, if I had players I liked. Might sell one, right, just to get money. We're in the tax. And I would probably move one for a future second at some point in time. And maybe I'd move two of them for future seconds. So that was my thought. And as much as anything, because of what you're saying, that the guaranteed contract at 30 is not a positive when you're a luxury tax team for a player that's unlikely to contribute to your roster this next year. Like, if I want to spend the 30th pick is like guaranteed a million something. It's the same as like a veteran minimum. I'd rather probably have Etuan Moore at the minimum than a 30th pick of an NBA draft while I'm trying to win a championship. That was a random Etuan Moore reference, but let's
like
go
it.
With it.
Yeah.
But the concept is, right, a random player that you don't really know that much about, but who, if somebody's hurt, could easily play 15 minutes a night and hold you together. And if in the worst case scenario, I had to play a little more than that, could. Whereas I don't think your 30th pick of the draft is going to be able to do that for you on the caliber of you know, I mean, like Desmond Bane is a nice player. He did a really good job for Memphis. He might have been a super pick by Grizzlies. We may rue the day. But, like, when as that playoff series progressed, he actually didn't get – like, he wasn't – that was too much, right? That was too much for him. They would have been better off if they were trying to win that specific playoff series on that given day to have you know, a player that was a veteran who'd been in the league for 10 years and ready and able to handle it.
All right, David, I know you, myself, Scotty, we can't speak for Ryan Smith. We definitely don't want to spend his money. But what I want to do is I want to say...
What? We're not spending Ryan Smith's money? Do you realize how much fun that would be?
It would be a lot of fun.
Oh, okay, sorry.
But I'm going to put... You're the new Jazz owner. You've got $4 billion. Let's say you got $4 billion in the bank. I want to know what you do with Mike Conley and what you do with the free agent situation and the luxury tax situation right
so
now.
So this is before I, like, get my ski house there and fly between. And this is different than what I'm – that $4 billion is being not allowed to just chase powder ski days?
Yes.
Okay. Like, okay. I don't think Mike Conley's situation is easy and simple. And I do think you have to sit in a room and make a decision as an organization before emotion gets involved of what's too much. Like, I think there's a moment, I think you've got, like, and I don't know the answers, is a third year too much? Is a third year at 15 too much? Probably not. Is a third year at 25 too much? Probably. Right? Like, there's a sliding scale here of years and money and tax impact and winning that's going on here. And I think you have – so the first decision is, does he help you win? And the answer is yes. And the second decision is, he still good? And the answer is yes. And then you have to start making the next decisions, which are that sliding scale I'm talking about. So I don't know the answer, but I don't believe it's just a sign in no matter what. I think there is a point in the process that hurts, and that's fine. And then there's a process there's a point where it's detrimental.
I want to circle back to Pop a little bit. I think Becky Hammon should have gotten the Portland job. But obviously that's their call.
You know, Becky, can I give a counter? I want to give a counter opinion on that.
Sure.
Okay. I don't know that I think Chauncey Billups should have gotten the Portland job. And I think there's something interesting going on right now in the league. There are very, very few head coaches that have been successful that have been assistants only.
So you're saying get the head coaching job, get fired, and then get another job later on, and that's the guy you want.
Stan Van Gundy was a successful head coach. He had been the head coach at the University of Wisconsin, right? Taylor Jenkins was the head coach at a G League team. Eric Spoelstra is an exception to the rule. He came through the system, and he never was a head coach anywhere. Steve Clifford was a good head coach. He was like a head coach at like Augustina State Northern Full Moon University.
So in regards to Quinn Snyder, you're taking the Missouri head coaching job into consideration.
And the Austin Toros head coaching job.
Yes. But was hired as an assistant coach.
Right. But if I'm looking at Alex Jensen, I'm interested in hiring Alex Jensen because he's been a head coach. So I think a little bit of what's going on right now with the Willie Greens and the Wes Unseld Juniors and the Chauncey Billups and some of these hires, and Becky Hammon fits into that. I'm not buying without some head coaching chops.
Is Becky Hammon
really hard?
Is she the next head coach of the Spurs?
Don't know.
I wonder how much say Pop will have in that.
Yeah, I had a theory for a while that Pop would quit halfway through a year and make Becky Hammon the head coach and no one had a choice, but I've been told by people that know that that's a bad theory.
I mean, your sources would be pretty correct, but I think it's going to happen because I think he wanted to be the head coach of the men's of the Olympic team, And I think he could parlay being a head coach of the Spurs into that. And now that he's done it, you can't quit now. But I imagine I've always kind of felt like January, February next year he hangs it up. Not necessarily giving Hammonds the head coaching job, but just that he got he wanted. He's an Olympic coach, and now he's done.
And his wife passed, so there's a huge life transformation he's going through, so I just don't know the answer on that. You know, by the way, one thing we don't really know, like, I mean, I guess he coached the G League team, or the Summer League team. Like, and we don't know this about Willie Green, we don't know this about Wes Unseld Jr., we don't know this about Becky Hammon. Like, this is not, so this is not specific. Like, we actually don't really know who, like, if any of these are good assistant coaches. Right, like their agency builds out a good narrative.
Oh, yeah.
I really would like the chyron at the bottom of all reporters that says who their agency is now. Like, that's my new request for NBA reporting. Adrian Wojnarowski, CAA, right underneath his graphic. Yeah. So when he's talking about a CAA client, you know it?
Yeah.
That would be really helpful for my understanding of narratives. Like, I actually read a piece the other day, which I didn't think was totally fair, but like Rachel Nichols almost single-handedly built the narrative that the Minnesota Timberwolves were incompetent. It was really interesting. Like, I thought it was a little Homer piece, but it was interesting how an individual reporter on the whole Jimmy Butler thing in Minnesota and that practice and all that stuff, like, builds a narrative on a player and then therefore builds it around an organization. Now, Minnesota certainly has not been seamless to their, you know, they've had plenty of things they've done wrong along the way, but it's interesting. I don't know. Sometimes I would just love to see that. Like, you know, I'd like to know because it matters.
Yeah, it does. David Locke right here on the Zone Sports Network. David, always a pleasure, my friend.
Let me summarize my take on this just so it's clear.
Yes.
On the whole concept of when these coaches get hired and they get these jobs and then the narrative is, oh, this is a great hire, we have no idea.
No.
And I just think we should be much more honest about it. Like we just don't have any idea. Like, I mean, you can look at a resume. Like, when Dennis hired Quinn Snyder, that was a pretty unique resume and a super bright guy who'd had success coaching. He'd had a pitfall or two. And there were reasons why you could really look at that and say, like, okay, I'm buying, or you could have just as equally said you're not buying, right? But you actually had a track record. When you're hiring Chauncey Billups and Willie Green and Jamal Mosley or Becky Hammon, like, you don't actually have any idea.
Well,
there's no track record of what they've done because we have not been inside coaches' meetings. We've never seen their scouting reports. We don't really know how they get along that well with players. We really don't know how they get along with players as a head coach because that's totally different than getting along with players as an assistant coach. And we really don't have any track record of what they did in their interviews. So I just think it's really garbage when everyone talks about it. And I think it's really false when everyone talks about what a great hire something is because they just don't know.
Well, I think relationships also have to play a part in that as well. You develop friendships. Like I've had, you know, hundreds of Utah fans stop me in the middle of a grocery store at a gas station and say, hey, what's Craig Smith going to do at Utah? And my first thought is, he's going to be great. But I say that because Craig's a friend of mine, and I root for Craig because I've developed a good relationship. But I know what he did at Utah State, but the Pac-12 and recruiting to that level and coaching at that level, I'm not sure how he's going to do. But deep down, I secretly root for him because he's a friend of mine, and I hope he does well. And so my initial thought is, he'll be great.
But that answer a little, well, there's two things. One, if you're walking through a grocery store and someone asks you, you probably should just answer the question. He's going to be great, right? Like, you're his friend, like, support
yeah.
him.
Yeah,
if you're
for
on
sure.
Air, if you're on air and you're supposed to be giving analysis, I think your analysis right there was perfect. Like, I think he's going to be great. Understand, like, I'm a friend of his, but look at what he did at Utah State. Look what he's done everywhere he's been. He's been successful. Now, this is the next hurdle for him. Can you recruit? Does he understand how to recruit Pac-12 athletes? And can he do it at Utah? And can he do it with the limitations that he has at Utah compared to some of the other Pac-12 schools where he may not have at his other place he may have had the best story to tell in every conference he's been in up to this point other than, you know, maybe one or two places. So but that's just an honest analysis of the situation. I don't think we get enough of that, frankly, on this. But I don't know. I think some of the grandstand, I don't know. I've said my piece.
Yeah, I got you. David, always a pleasure. Thanks, man.
Okay, talk to you soon.
David Locke, play-by-play voice of the Utah Jazz right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Live here at Tim Daly Nissan in Murray, 4500 South State Street. A lot of Jazz gear up for grabs. Come by, grab a shirt, hat, whatever you'd like. We'll hook you up. And then also check out these vehicles, the Nissan Titan. Love this ride. It is available for you at 0% financing. You can also spread that out over 7 years. You can get the forever warranty, which costs you nothing, which means that ride is going to be on the road for as long as you own it. You can put as many miles you want on it, and it's covered. And that forever warranty costs you a grand total of $0. So come down here, Tim Daly Nissan in Murray, 4500 South State Street, right here on the Zone Sports Network.
The Big Show. The Big Show. With Jake Scott and Gordon Monson.
The television voice of the Utah Jazz, the one and only Greg Bowler. Jack, give me a pulse of Jazz fandom. What are people coming up and talking to you about?
I found three things. First, they declare a disappointment, which is kind of the process of grieving. They get that out of their system, and then they start talking about what if, which is another part of the process. That, boy, I wish that Donovan and Mike would have been healthy at the same time. And then the third one is, what are we going to do to make this really happen and keep Donovan happy? That's kind of the series of questions. I think this is way, way too early to discuss a Donovan Mitchell issue, but I'm anxious to see how Ryan takes care of this offseason.
Catch the Big Show weekdays from 2 to 7, presented by Big O Tires, the team you trust, on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. It's time to spin the wheel and talk some sports. This is another edition of Sports Roulette with Hans Olsen and Scotty G on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Live here at Tim Daly Nissan in Murray, 4500 South State Street. All right, time for Sports Roulette. Take some of the biggest storylines that we have not had a chance to get to.
We're packed, too, and we don't have a ton of time. And we got. I want to get to all 13 of these.
Okay. Well, Lloyd, with that, let's fire it up.
So 32,000 fans, but serious protocol?
Yes, I don't understand this, Scotty. The group that's running the Open is allowing 32,000 fans. That's more fans than have attended any PGA Tour event all year long. It's 80% capacity, and that's a daily allowance. They're going to have them rotating in. Obviously, they'll have them roped off, and they'll put all of the fans that are probably sick around each other. But the protocol that they're putting these golfers through, each golfer can have three people in their camp. All four have to stay in the same room, and they can't leave the room. They're either in the room, in the locker room, the clubhouse, or on the golf course.
Wow.
They will be fed there. They will be entertained there. They will work there. And while they're involved in the Open, that's all they'll be. And guess what? They don't care if you're vaccinated. They don't care about anything. If you are exposed to the virus.
Even if you're vaccinated.
Even if you're vaccinated. It doesn't matter. If you're exposed, if you just brush by somebody that tests positive, you're out. They're going to pluck you out of that tournament. Just like they did John Rahm. I'm trying to remember which tournament. He had like a 6-stroke lead on a Saturday, and they took him out of the tournament. But they're going to have the 32,000 fans there. But a strange protocol for the golfers. Vaccinated or not. It's kind of strange, isn't it?
It is. Europe seems to be a little bit more on edge than we are over here in terms of the virus.
When it comes to the players, but not the fans.
But the fans, it's like, phew, yeah, go let's ahead. Go. Be free. Go get crazy.
Go get
and
sick.
You said that's at 80%?
Yeah, 80%. 32,000 fans will be gathered around that course.
Wow. All right, spin it.
American Ninja Iggy's.
So, did you see who competed in American Ninja Warrior?
Is it Jake Heaps?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, former BYU quarterback. Was he with the Seahawks?
He got a cup of coffee with the Seahawks.
Former Seattle Seahawk. The
former Kansas Jayhawk, former Miami Hurricane.
That's right. A couple transfers. The Seattle Phenom, the notorious IGGY. What are some of his other nicknames?
Notorious IGGY. Can't really top that one.
He competed. I don't know how many people got to see it. I was able to watch a highlight of it. Just
did
a
you do all right?
No, he was out in under a minute. It was the second obstacle. So he did the foot one, you know, where you bounce foot to foot, then grab the rope and swing to the platform. He got through that. He grabbed the rope, went to the platform, didn't quite make it, had to push off the platform to get a little momentum, and then he landed on the platform. But then the second obstacle is that one where you jump and grab the bar, and you have to bump it up top, and then it slides down.
Oh, yeah.
And you really
Yeah, he's not doing that.
Yeah, and it shook him. In fact, in this episode, that shook – I want to say that shook like 24 of the competitors got eliminated on the – they call that the double down obstacle. Double down.
Yeah, I think that was – I don't even know how – because I think he's doing some stuff for radio station out there, right? In Seattle.
I don't know. I know that he is.
I think you're right on that.
Is it?
I don't know if it's full time.
I don't know about that because I know that he's running a quarterback camp for Russell Wilson.
All right. That's not
so
bad.
He works for Russell Wilson because Russell Wilson came on the big screen just before Jake started competing. And Russell Wilson like had some type of encouraging message or something for Jake. I'll tell you the one thing I would never want to compete in. Like, I'll do American Idol, and I'll do America's Got Talent, and I'll do – I won't do Naked.
American Bandstand.
I won't do Naked and Afraid. I would do Alone.
Would you do Alone?
I would try
Do you feel
alone.
Like you have enough outdoor skills to
– I would
– Or is it just an excuse to get away from the kids?
No. Would you do Naked and Afraid? For
no. Hey, baby. No. Rock is falling into
dude,
ice.
I would need a lot more than a million.
Oh, okay, let's say 5 million.
Nope. It's going to have to be 8 digits at least.
8?
Yeah.
So that would be...
Because it's going to be enough money so three, that I will never... Because I would never be on this show ever again. I would never be on the radio again. I would go Bill Buckner and find some kind of a middle of nowhere compound up in the middle of Idaho.
Uh-huh.
Then nobody would ever see me again.
Compound. So, like the Girard double, compound?
Double-digit million. Would you try Alone?
I would do it just for a weekend or so and then realize that I'm really hungry and I'm really cold and I'd like to go home now.
I'd like to go home now.
Yeah.
I know Treebeard's trying to get in on that Alone.
He'd do all right.
I think he would do really well. I think he'd be stubborn and ornery, and I think he'd kill everything within a 100-mile radius.
Well, the problem is, can he kill stuff that isn't like what are the 10 items? He's like, I got 10 rifles.
I want 10 bows and arrows. You can only take one. Well,
a bow and nine arrows.
All I need is one.
He'd be sneaking in a gun.
Yeah, he would. I love Alone. The new season's rolling, and it's so good. Thursday nights, the new episode.
We need to chat with that guy from Utah.
Would you? Yeah, I know. David. I've got his number. I've been talking to him.
Yeah.
He said all he needs to do is get a clearance from Alone. Would you be interested in talking to him?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You go through experience like that.
Well, you know they hauled him off that seat, that set.
Yeah, they tore him out of there. He was not willing to go.
I was so upset about that. He had all those fish. He should have just started porking down the fish, you know?
There was a guy here locally that was on a reality show, and he I probably shouldn't tell you who he was or what show he was on, but he essentially, I was talking to him. He was on a radio show at a cluster that I was at, and so I went over and talked to him because I was a big fan of the show he was on. And he said, look, you sign these documents, and they essentially say in the fine print, who they want to win will win. Like, you can do all the things, but if you, they don't want you to win, you're not winning. So just enjoy the exposure of being on, and they'll let you know who's going to win.
Oh, really?
Yeah. At least the show he was on.
Well, that's why we need to talk to this guy. He lives in Mount Pleasant.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, he
that sounds like a place where a guy like that would want to live.
Yeah, he works – well, he works for a – it's like a youth camp up there. And with – I think it's disturbed youth or some type of addiction recovery maybe that he works with. He's apparently he's a great guy. I think his name was Salt Lake City David, and he was like on season 3 or 4. And he was a phenomenal participant.
Should have won.
Should have won. I still can't. Still can't believe they hauled him out of there. He was emaciated though. He looked horrible. His body was tore up. But yeah, Jake Heaps eliminated in under a minute on the second obstacle.
Not surprising. All right, spin it, Lloyd.
Worse than originally thought.
That's Kawhi Leonard.
I was thinking it might be Kawhi.
Yeah, Kawhi Leonard is ACL, partially torn ACL, had a surgery to repair it. That obviously happened during the Utah Jazz series with the Clippers. Kawhi went out and was not even able to appear in the Western Conference Finals against Phoenix. Apparently, Scotty, it's not a full tear, but it's a partial tear. Partial tear and repair this late. When are we starting this season?
Early October, your normal schedule start time.
August, September.
I've heard he's looking about 6 months.
So he's looking at returning maybe in January?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, January, February. And I think that might be best-case scenario.
Boy, that's a terrible break. That's a horrible break for Kawhi and for the Clippers. I guess Denver's staring down the same thing with Jamal Murray.
Yeah.
Jamal went down in August, was it? Late August?
Yeah, it was right before the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
Or was it during the playoffs?
No, it was right before the playoffs.
Okay, yeah.
So I think it was like late August. So, and you're looking at 10 months for him.
Yeah.
So the West is going to be without two of their superstars again for the majority of the beginning of next season, and maybe even longer than that.
Yeah. All right, there you go. Sports Roulette right here on the Zone Sports Network, Hans Olsen, Scott Girard. Coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll chat with Brian Taylor of Real Golf Radio. Start off right here on the Zone Sports Network.
Win, win, win.
It's a win ticket Wednesday on the Zone Sports Network.
It's a win ticket Wednesday right here.
Win.
Listen all day for the win ticket Wednesday sounder for your chance to win tickets.
What? Who authorized that?
To all the biggest concerts, games, and other great events here in the state of Utah.
It's a win ticket Wednesday right here.
Right here.
Right here.
Right here.
Woo! On 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
.975 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
Two items of business, a little bit of cleanup items.
Okay.
Number one, by the way, three
items.
Oh.
A little house cleaning we got to get to. You go ahead and start.
Well, I've had a bit rough day, I know.
No, everything's fine except for when a guy comes in, he's like, "Hey, did you know Scott danced with the trendsetter?"
Oh, shoot. I'm sorry about
that. You're not even remotely sorry about that.
Because I don't remember what the shot was that you took on me.
I didn't take any shot on you.
I mean, I don't want to turn this
with
into...
With the listener who just came by?
No, not with this listener, but I can't remember what it was. But it was funny, but it was like, geez, man, that was kind of a low blow. And I can't remember what it was. I just remember being... it was when Ed Lamb and E. Tuliaki came to the tent at Ron McBride's golf tournament, and you said something, and I was like, don't say that. And but I can't remember what
so
it was.
So you've been sitting on that all this time, and then this guy shows up.
Yeah. And then
great listener, nice guy, and you're like, hey, this is Scott. Did you know he danced for his high school choir?
Okay, so you have a very intelligent son. Well, you had three intelligent sons, but obviously your son that's in college right now is extremely intelligent. And he said, does he take after his mother? And I said...
No, he asked me, does he take after dad? And I said, no, it's all his mother.
And I said, oh, that's not fair. I said... Did you know that Scotty danced for the Trendsetters? And he laughed.
A really uncomfortable laugh, because all of us realize that you're just trying to be a jerk.
No, okay.
Which is fine. If I offended you, I am sorry.
Which you did, but I bottled it up. And this is how it came out. It was redemption.
You just save it, don't you? You just let it sit and simmer.
Marinate until it's time to unload. The other thing that I wanted to get to, so we had our major pain in the butt at 10:50.
Yes.
I wanted to see if you guys wanted to add a potential accelerator to this or a tag on to this, just to change it up a little bit. Do you guys want to pick one player or one of the golfers that you picked, one of the three that you picked, and allow it to be double points? So either double the negative strokes or double the positive strokes that individual. So each of us pick one of our three, and whatever they golf, it either doubles them in the negative or doubles them in the positive.
Woo!
I thought it'd be kind of a fun, just a fun little tag on for our major pain in the butt.
That's interesting.
So if you don't know what the major pain in the butt is, Scotty, Lloyd, and myself, we each pick three golfers. The lowest collective score of the three golfers wins. Scotty, you've got John Rahm, Victor Hovland, and Patrick Cantlay. I've got Colin Morikawa. I've got Eatmore Beast Lowry and Louis Oosthuizen. Lloyd has Schauffele, Kepka, and a late addition, he took Bryson DeChambeau.
Bryson DeChambeau, yes. Was that on the air or off the air? We discussed that.
That was on the air.
Okay.
I can't remember who he dropped. Was it
Fleetwood?
It was Fleetwood.
Fleetwood Mac.
It was Fleetwood Mac to pick up the beef hammer. Would you guys like to do it?
I'm down.
One golfer.
Give me Rahm.
Okay. Now remember, if they're in the plus or in the positive,
it doubles and it works
against
you.
Doubles the positive.
All right.
Lloyd?
Give me Xander.
Okay. And I will take Colin Morikawa.
So essentially, we all just took our number one pick.
Yeah, but I'm thinking about putting it on Lowry. Lowry just won it 2 years ago. He's got to be feeling confident. I know it's a different course. Yeah, I'm going to stay with Colin Morikawa. The final thing that we need to get to. In Whole World News, we were talking about a situation where there were fireworks.
Yeah.
And you made a really funny restroom joke.
Yeah.
And then we brought up an old newscast.
That's right.
From years ago. Well, Lloyd has worked very diligently to find said newscast. And here it is, the man that cleared out a Home Depot.
Some scary moments for customers at a Kansas Home Depot. Police responded to reports of a bomb threat at the store in Wichita. A customer alerted employees. A man inside the bathroom said there was a bomb in the building. Police were able to locate the man responsible for those comments, and that man told police he warned other guests to leave the restroom because he was, quote, fixing to blow it up, but had no intention of causing a panic. Man also told police others in the room laughed, understanding his joke, which I'm just now getting. Home Depot says they will not be pressing charges. But I can tell you right now, you asked the producer for me to read that, didn't you?
To Ethan now, please.
No.
Are we going to have to go to a commercial break?
No, we're going to get it. We're going to get it.
I'm now just getting.
Hey, everybody, you ought to leave this bathroom.
You need to get out of here because I'm fixing to blow it up.
Fixing to blow. And somebody came to the employees who were like, hey, somebody's blowing up the building.
Yeah, there's that guy just sitting on the toilet.
I don't know if the cops went in there to find him and they were like,
oh, now we know what you were talking about.
And the guy was just trying to be...
Some bomb-sniffing dog's dead.
The guy was trying to be courteous.
He was trying to be nice, yeah.
Hey, everybody, you're going to want to get out of here because I'm fixing to blow it up. So get yourself into the hardware section.
Those N95 masks are on aisle 7. You may want to grab a couple of those.
Oh, man. And somebody went to the manager and alerted them to the fact this guy's dropping a bomb in the bathroom. That's horrible.
Oh, man. It's one of my favorite all-time
stories.
Well,
the best part is that they put that story on her.
She had no idea.
And it hit her as she was going through it. And then she's like, back to you, Ethan. And Ethan goes, no.
No. Don't send it back to me.
Oh, that's so good.
All right, 103, Hans and Scotty. We'll talk some golf with Brian Taylor next here on the Zone Sports Network.